You might not think that bats play a role in Wisconsin agriculture, but the truth is that they are a very necessary part of our ecosystem. They pollinate, they consume insects, they help spread seeds. They do a lot of things to impact crops and crop harvests. Sadly, as you may well know, the deadly white nose syndrome is spreading across the U.S., and that threatens to wipe out a large percentage of our bats. Our guests today are going to talk about bat conservation efforts, and they're going to share how you and I can help save them by building bat houses. Paul White is a mammal ecologist at the Natural Heritage Conservation Bureau of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. Paul, welcome back. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Jennifer Riddell, who has been with us many times, actually, cave and mine specialist at the Natural Heritage Conservation Bureau of the Wisconsin DNR. That's a mouthful, Jennifer.
It is.
But you do a lot of great work. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
You know, we have this white nose syndrome that could decimate, or maybe has it already decimated, our bat population here in the state?
Here in Wisconsin, you know, we were fortunate to have some advance notice before the arrival of the disease. So it showed up here for the first time in 2014. Mm-hmm. And we really saw a decline in the initial mine where the disease showed up. We lost about 70% of that population over the course of that first affected winter. And last winter, we saw that the disease had spread. So when we go back this winter, we anticipate that we'll see similar declines at those 14 new sites.
14 new sites. And maybe just to go back to the basics, Paul, for a minute. We have how many? Eight species?
Seven different species.
Seven
in the state.
In mm-hmm. Wisconsin. And so they are, we've got little brown, big brown.
Right.
Long-eared?
Right. And so they could loosely be categorized into two categories. The cave bats, which are the bats that will seek caves and mines in the winter. And those are the little brown bat, big brown bat, the northern long-eared bat, and the eastern pipistrelle. And the other bats would be considered migratory or tree bats. And those are the ones that actually leave Wisconsin during the winter months. And that's the silver-haired bat, eastern red bat, and the hoary bat.
And are those who leave Wisconsin in better shape than the ones that stay, or...?
As far as white nose syndrome, yes. As far as we know, they are not affected to the extent that cave bats do because they do not hibernate to the extent that cave bats do, although they have found through swabbing efforts the silver-haired bat and the eastern red bat to actually be carriers of the fungus. So they may have visited caves or mines during the fall and inadvertently picked up the fungus and moved it from one site to another.
So it's a fungus. And where do we know how it originated or where it came from? Jennifer, do you?
Yeah, we know that the fungus is present in Europe and Asia. It's widespread and very diverse there. And bats appear to be coexisting with it, and the disease white nose syndrome is present. But we really didn't encounter it here in the United States and in North America until 2006 or 2007 when it first showed up in a couple of sites in New York State and began causing mortality events that caught people's attention.
So maybe they came over on a ship somehow, or...?
Yeah, we certainly do not share bat species between the continents, so it's very possible that it was brought over either by someone who had visited a cave and had picked up fungal spores on their clothing or footwear.
Wouldn't have to be a bat.
Yeah, and potentially brought it into a cave here, or there's always, yes, possibilities of something like a bat coming on a shipping crate.
I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. I haven't done that yet. Maybe you have questions about bat. Are you a bat fan? Would you prefer maybe to never cross paths with them? You do anything to support or attract bats? Give us a call with your questions or comments at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. And if you've got a cool photo involving a bat, we'd love to see that as well. And this is actually Bat Week, is it not?
It is. It's International Bat Week this week, and it's a collaborative effort between a number of agencies and organizations just to raise awareness. And really, at the end of this week, on October 31st, Halloween, on Saturday, there's an effort to construct at least 5,000 bat houses and to actually break a world record for bat house construction. So we are encouraging folks to construct a bat house on Saturday on Halloween. And then most importantly, to report it at batweek.org so that we can find out if we achieve the goal and if we set a world record.
Now, that'd be a cool thing to do on your own or if you've got kids.
Correct.
Get the kids involved in
it. It's an easy project, and if you visit the DNR website and search bats, we've got an instruction packet for how to build your own bat house. And the materials are wood and caulk, some screws, and then paint at the end. So the materials are fairly simple and easy to procure, and construction doesn't take all that long.
Well, that'd be a fun way to spend part of Halloween, wouldn't it?
It would be.
We think so.
Are you going, Paul, are you going to build a bat house?
Yes. In fact, we're going to be hosting an event at Monona in the Winnequa Dream Park area. There we'll have 20 pre-cut bat houses available for the first 20 people that come in, and they'll be able to put it together as we show them how. And unfortunately, there's a limited amount that we could actually put together beforehand, but we think that a lot of people will leave happy and with a nice newly constructed bat house.
That is very, very cool. So you'll get 20 constructed right on the spot. And when is that again?
That's on Saturday from 12 to 2.
From noon to 2. Mm-hmm. All right. And where again?
Monona, the Dream Park Shelter on Healy Lane. Yep.
Oh, wonderful. Talking with Paul White and Jennifer Riddell today about the bat week, breaking the record for the most bat houses. We're going to try and do that, but also just to talk about the importance of our bats and what they bring to our ecosystem. Questions, comments, give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And before we take calls, let's go to the Facebook. Rebecca says, we have a cabin in Washera County and had a maternity colony of bats in the peak of our roof. In early fall, we had someone come out and exclude them with the little one-way doors and then sealed up the cracks, etc. My question is, will they come back and try to get in the spring? They like to hang out under the porch roof over our front patio door in the evenings, and frankly leaves quite a mess. Can we discourage this in any way? I'm grateful that they're... Let's see what she said. I'm grateful that they're around taking care of all of our mosquitoes in the summer, but they sure can leave a mess on the front porch.
Sure. So I can address that. And Rebecca, if you're listening, it's really great that you had the exclusion performed in the fall after the bats have left. That's exactly what we want folks to do. And really, you've got two different types of bat use occurring at your house. So the bats that you excluded from the peak of the roof, you're right, we're probably a maternity colony, females rearing their pups. During the summer months, the pups are born around June 1st, and then they don't fly until July 15th, and mom needs to go out and forage on insects and then come back and nurse her pups during that time period. But what you're seeing as far as bats under the porch roof and in front of the patio door is a different type of use. So when bats wake up just after sunset, they'll take off and forage for a few hours. And so they leave their day roost, their maternity roost. And during the middle of the night, they'll seek out often a different location to roost again. And during that time period, they digest the insects that they've been eating, they rest, and then, of course, they leave guano behind because they've been digesting those insects. So you'll see guano show up under a night roost, which is what you've got. And unfortunately, it's not as easy to exclude bats from a night roost. You know, they often seek out covered areas that are protected. But some possible solutions are to make it a little less comfortable or safe feeling for the bat. So, for example, you could try leaving a light on. You could try changing the temperature and airflow by adding a fan to that area or directing a fan at the area of the night roost. And you can certainly attempt to, and this isn't always possible, but attempt to remove the roosting surface or replace the roosting surface with something very smooth that it would be difficult for the bat to grab onto. So a couple of ideas. We've also heard of folks, you know, floating balloons and placing other objects up near the porch roof to try to discourage bats from roosting there.
So there you go. Thank you so much for that question. Appreciate your call. I'm sure there are probably some other people that have that. You probably get that question from time to time.
We sure do.
We do.
Yeah. Tim and Marinette, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, I was just wondering. We get a bat about once a year in our house. And I was thinking if I was to put some bat houses in the woods, would that attract them from coming into the house? And if it did, would they hibernate in these houses?
They typically will not hibernate. They definitely will not hibernate in bat houses. And certainly putting up bat houses near your cabin or your home is a great way to try and provide alternative habitat for them. Have you noticed any bats in the attic space before? Because typically when we do see annual occurrences of bat activity in homes, there is usually a maternity colony either nearby or within the cabin itself.
Actually, no. The attic is secured pretty good. For some reason, they seem to just like our living room.
Yeah. Certainly the best way to probably address that concern would be to put up a bat house nearby, and certainly not on a tree. You'd want to put it up on a post, somewhere where it gets good sunlight, or even on the side of the cabin, although it sounds like you're trying to get rid of bats from the inside of your home. So putting it up on a pole would be ideal, 15 to 20 feet high and in good sunlight where you can get 6 to 8 hours of sunlight. Putting it on a tree will allow predators to go up and down, but then also will provide shade with the overhanging branches too.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Lewis on Facebook wondered, sort of a related question here. I was given a bat house as a gift and wondering if there's still time to hang it so hopefully attract bats this fall in Milwaukee.
Yeah, Lewis, I think that's a wonderful gift. I always encourage bat houses as gifts, and there absolutely is time to hang it. So bat houses are occupied by typically one of just two species, either little brown bats, which are the most common, or slightly less common are big brown bats. And both of those species, as Paul mentioned earlier, are hibernators. So beginning as early as August 15th and into early September, those bats are leaving the area of their summer roost, their bat house or the tree or building that they might be roosting in. And they make their way to caves and mines where they spend the next 6 or 7 months, without food availability. And then when they emerge in early and mid-May, they start to make their way back to their summer roost area. And so up until mid-May and even the beginning of June, you can certainly get that bat house up. And we often suggest that people give it 2 or 3 years before they plan to see it occupied. The bats need a little bit of time to investigate and find the house.
And will other birds, for example, will they get in there while you're waiting?
If the bat house is poorly built, birds can get in there, such as house sparrows. They might build nests in there. But typically, a bat house only has about a 3/4 inch space in between the baffles. And so that's usually not quite enough for a bird to get in there. But there are other pests like wasps or mud daubers that might build a nest in there. And so in that case, we recommend, especially during the winter, to try and clean out the bat houses on a routine basis.
We have Steve in Heartland has yet another related question, I believe. Steve, hi, thanks for calling.
Yeah, I think you addressed my question. We've had bats that have come into our house up in the attic areas, and about 2 years ago I set up, I got a really nice bat house, put it on one of the oak trees pretty close to the house. It does have pretty good sun exposure throughout the day, and bats just won't go into it, and I'm just wondering if I need to, sounds like I need to give it a little bit more time than it takes a couple of years.
Well, Steve, I think it's fantastic that you've put up a bat house. You're right to put it in a sunny location, and what we do suggest, though, is to not put it on a tree, and so you might want to consider moving it to either the side of a building or a post. So we always say it should be a minimum of 8 feet up in the air. The bats really need to drop down and out of the bat house in order to fly away. But the reason that we say don't put the house on a tree is because, you know, even though it might receive a lot of sun, trees, you know, can be a little more shaded. And then also bats are very vulnerable as they're emerging from and returning to the bat house at dusk and at dawn. So they tend to be a bit wary of trees because it's a great place for hawks and owls and raccoons, predators, to hang out. So you might want to try moving it.
There we go.
Okay. I've collected some of their droppings, too. I've heard that if I spread that around, that potentially could cause the scent in the spring to... wasn't exactly a pleasant job, but no. That may help as well, too.
Yeah, it's... It hasn't been shown to be effective, but it certainly can't hurt.
Not going to hurt anything. In the meantime, it's really good fertilizer, isn't it?
It's very good fertilizer.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Thanks, Steve, for calling. I appreciate your call. Talking about bats, protecting our bats, saving our bats. We're talking about Bat Week and how you could build a bat house this week, especially on Halloween Day. Paul White and Jennifer Riddell from the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources are guests. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Looking forward to your questions or comments about bats as we visit with Paul and Jennifer. Join in 1-800-642-1234. Post on our Facebook page. We've already had a nice photo of bats from Robert. And Bill sent us a video of, can you guys explain to me the video? This, he catches them and lets them go outside or guides them out the front door. I used to fearfully duck as they flew overhead, but 2 years ago I was standing in a doorway when the bat I was looking for flew between my head and the door jamb. It brushed against my ear. It didn't get caught in my hair, and that caused me to lose my fear of bats. But I still respect them as wild animals. Attached is a video of a bat I let out of the house that wanted to come back in.
Well, I didn't see the whole video, but I did see the technique that he used, which was a bucket that he was able to trap the bat in against the wall and then put a piece of sturdy cardboard or a book behind that and then allow that to go out on its own accord. So that's certainly a technique that we recommend if they can't get out on their own accord.
Yeah. And so if you want to go to our Facebook page, that'd be an example of a way to safely capture a bat?
Right. And the one thing I did notice was that it appeared to be in winter, and so that's not necessarily something that we would recommend, and we would actually recommend to either contact us or a local rehab facility that they would be able to take in a bat so you wouldn't have to release it in the middle of winter.
Yeah, you wouldn't want... I mean, it could be as good as dead if it's...
They would have a challenge either getting back in the home or finding an alternative roost site at that point, yeah.
Brad in Green Bay, it's your turn. Thanks for calling, Brad. What can we do for you?
Yeah, just a simple question. I love the fact that we have a bat week, and with the extinction of bats, butterflies, and bees, I'm curious why we haven't formed more of a bridge to groups like the 4-H, Girl Scout, Boy Scouts, Boys and Girls Clubs, and, you know, all these. I mean, my kids belong to Cub Scouts right now, and I'd love them to build a bat house, and we'll probably do that. But that's all I have to say.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Are there some efforts in that area, Paul, to sort of involve youth groups?
In Green Bay, I'm not sure of anything specific. We do commonly work with Eagle Scouts, Cub Scouts, even Girl Scouts to build bat houses. And so there certainly could be an effort from our end to step up and try and work with those on a routine basis. International Bat Week, this is actually something new, so this is kind of the first year. It's pilot study, kind of, and so we're hoping to really gain support and then over the years start to incorporate a lot of these youth groups as well.
Yeah, and so organization like 4-H would be an ideal one anyway, and they're very flexible when it comes to projects and programs. So
absolutely.
Yeah, it'd be another good organization. A nice photo of bats from Robert in our comments section. And so I hope you'll go to our Facebook page and take a look. Steele in Appleton, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hey, thanks so much. Yeah, my question is, and I probably called a couple of years ago about some of your bad folks here, and so I have a porch, and there's a deck above above me, and earlier a caller said, you know, they were getting poop and all. And so I had a friend visiting once. She said, oh, I showed her the bat, and I said, oh, that's so cool. And she says, oh, the poop, the poop. And I guess a while back in some camp in out west, people got ill, you know, but, and I used to plant trees in the Northwest for 3 years, and so you're living, all the animals, everybody poops, so how worried should we be about that?
Yeah, Steele, that's a good question. So, you know, certainly you shouldn't be directly handling the bat guano. And I think the disease that your friend might have been referring to is histoplasmosis. So once bat guano dries, and other types of guano as well, a fungus can grow on that guano, and then as it's aerosolized during cleanup, dusty conditions, those fungal spores can be inhaled and cause the disease histoplasmosis. So if we're talking about a few pellets of guano that are appearing on a porch below a night roost, you know, sweeping them up certainly isn't a problem. And if anything, as we mentioned earlier, it's great fertilizer. Guano is an excellent source of nitrogen, so put it on the garden.
Mm-hmm. There we go. Thanks a lot, Steele, for calling. I want to give Cynthia in Fort Atkinson a chance to join in. Cynthia, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, this was very timely. I came into my kitchen and turned on the radio because I was starting to bake bat-shaped cookies for my son's Halloween classroom party tomorrow. And my motive in bringing bat-shaped cookies is to slip a little information to the kids, too, about how great bats are and that they're not really that spooky. But I wanted to tell you that I have successful bat houses. We put them up about 3 years ago, one on the east side of our house that gets a lot of sun, and one on the south side of the house that doesn't get as much sun. The one on the east side is very well occupied, and we put them up because we had bats roosting in shutters all around their house and making a mess. So now the mess is at least just confined to mm-hmm. one area. I wanted to ask, though, I read some time ago that the after the populations have been so, I don't think decimated is the right word, because I think actually only 10% of the population remains in the Northeast. But I've read that loss is not continuing and it's maybe stabilized. I wonder if there's some resistance in that population, like in New York and New England, and if we can expect to see that here, or if there's any kind of treatment to be done in the caves where the bats are overwintering to try to prevent the white-nose fungus from being so much of a problem here.
Good questions. Thanks for calling. Paul?
Well, thank you, Cynthia, for putting up bat houses and telling us your story. They certainly like that east side because they like the morning sun. And so that's definitely a good area, south, southeast, southwest facing. But as far as the bat house or the bats are concerned in the Northeast, we're still trying to figure out what exactly is going on there. Like you had mentioned, some of these populations have been decimated, in some cases anywhere from 90 to 100% mortality. But we are seeing, in some cases, some of the populations actually holding strong. And so we're still trying to figure out what this means as far as immune individuals, or if there's something about the microclimate of that particular cave or mine that makes it different. And so we're still trying to figure that out. Will it actually affect bats in the same way here in Wisconsin? It's really tough to tell. And unfortunately, in many of the states that it has been in, very similar type effects have been seen, where you see white nose go through the first couple of years. You see large mortality associated with that, and then usually a couple 5 to 6 years after that, some sort of a stabilization, although we really are just trying to figure that out at this point. Yeah.
Can we fumigate a cave? Can we kill white nose?
Right. And so we're certainly looking at a lot of different treatment options and management options. And a lot of different agencies, NGOs, and the like are actually looking at that. The one thing we have to be careful of is the treatment safe for the bats? Is it the treatment safe for any of the other animals that might be associated with a cave or mine? And then is it good for the environment, too, and doesn't have a negative impact? And so there have been a lot of studies out there that have shown some treatments have been working in the lab, but there's been limited field trials at this point. And we're certainly working with a lot of folks, NGOs and universities, especially here at University of Wisconsin. We're trying to develop a vaccine or some other type of treatment trial that we might be able to move forward with, especially this winter and in the next few winters.
And again, Cynthia, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call very much. I want to give Rod and Weyerhaeuser a chance to join us. Rod, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Thank you. Good program. I'm 56, and I was just going to say I can remember when I was pretty small. We used to go bass fishing at night, and, it just seemed like the bats were, fuffle over your head like that, constantly, And I still, go out at night, and the bats just aren't there like they used to be. So I'm just kind of wondering, this white nose virus, is it a kind of natural thinning thing, or is it maybe due to climate change? And also, all the time, they always talk about the bats with rabies. I often wondered why these bats can carry it, but they supposedly it doesn't kill the bat.
Hmm. Well, that may or may not be true. Jennifer?
So I'll address, Rod, your first comments about white nose and population declines. So bats, because of their natural history, because they congregate in large numbers at very critical phases of their annual cycle, both during the maternity period in the summer and then in the hibernation period in caves and mines during the winter, are in general susceptible to decline. And so that's one of the reasons that white nose is hitting the population so hard. All of the eggs are in one basket when these bats are in a cave or a mine that gets infected or affected by the disease. In terms of a noticeable effect on the summer landscape right now, Europe, up in the northern part of Wisconsin, the disease has been present and has been decimating bat populations in the UP, which is where a lot of hibernacula are, for a few years now. And so it's possible that you're starting to notice fewer bats on the summer landscape. Additionally, people will sometimes notice large numbers of bats over water because bats are attracted to water sources, particularly early in the evening. They go there to get a drink, and then they forage on the insects that are there. And if there's a roost nearby, for example, an old house or an old building or a snag that ends up falling down or a building that's demolished and the roost habitat goes away, we can suddenly see a shift in a local bat population. So a number of reasons that you might be noticing a difference. The white nose syndrome fungus itself is an invasive species introduced to North America.
Mm. There we go. Rod, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, by the way. Finally have open lines again at 800-642-1234. Let's turn to Al in Durand next. Hi, Al.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
I suspect that a lot of people have a fear of bats because of something that was just mentioned, and that's rabies. And I'm wondering how valid is that fear, and is there any statistics that might indicate how common rabies would be in a bat colony?
Sure. Thank you, Al. Within the wild population, it is estimated that it's less than 1% of the bats actually have rabies. So it's a really, really small percentage of bats that might actually have rabies. It's of the bats that might seem sick. You might walk outside and find a bat laying on the ground, just acting unusual. It's of those bats that have a higher prevalence in anywhere from 3 to 4 to 5%. So it's still a relatively small percentage of bats that actually have rabies.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We had a question from Jeff in Greenville. I currently have two bat houses about 40 feet apart on the west gable end of an old dairy barn. at the north and south eave line, about 25 to 30 feet high, overlooking an open hay field. Is there a recommended spacing for bat houses? The south face of the barn would also be available for bat houses, and it's 100 feet long. The only caveat is that the south eave often hosts a colony of cliff swallows in the summer. What do you think, Jennifer?
Good question, Jeff. Really, with bat houses, it's all about location, location, location. And all we can do when we provide habitat for bats is take what we know that they like and try to offer them that. And so the more variety and the more choices and more selection that you can give the bats, the better. We don't have any recommendations about spacing. You know, often people will mount their bat house on a post, and we do recommend if you've got two of them, you can put one on one side of the post and the other, you know, directly opposite it on the back of the post to give bats that temperature gradient that they can choose between. And so I think, you know, whether you've got them 40 feet apart or right next to each other is less important than perhaps placing them facing in different directions, and then whichever one is occupied first, you might want to consider moving the second bat house next to the occupied bat house.
There we go. I want to go back. I talked about the importance of bats to our ecosystem, but if you put it in a dollars and cents terms, bats have a very significant impact on our state.
They certainly do, and there was a recent study and published in Science in 2011 that looked at different states and how you know what the effects bats might have on the agricultural industry. And in Wisconsin, depending on the pest year, whether it's a high pest year or a low pest year, it ranged anywhere from $658 million all the way up to $1.5 billion of added annual cost that bats provide on a yearly basis in consuming a lot of these predators of agricultural plants that we have. And so if you look at Dane County alone, I think it's roughly 320,000 of harvested acres, and it's anywhere from $26 million all the way up to $65 million that they're providing on an ecological service.
And with the insects they're eating, farmers are then not in a position where they need to apply pesticides or herbicides, where a lot of that cost comes, but also for potential environmental costs as well.
Exactly.
The savings. Christina in Sparta, thanks for calling. Hi.
Well, thank you. Thanks for the program. I'm interested in protecting bats from the danger of getting killed incidentally for example, there's a building where there's a door jam where several bats on a daily basis like to hide. And I'm wondering what to do in the summer months, if there's something I could spray like vinegar or something that would deter them from that area so I can protect them.
That's fantastic that you're concerned about them, Christina, and trying to do the best you can for them. Is it possible to fill the space that they're using prior to having them return in the summer?
I'm wondering, yeah, the door gets opened and closed, and there's just a tiny space, and it's hard to kind of keep them out of that door jam because of the way the door is built, and I'm renting in a building that isn't my own, and several people, aside from myself, I'm very careful when I open the door to look to see if there's a bat, but I do find several crushed bats.
Okay, so they're between the door and the jam.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, sometimes, you know, depending on the situation, you could attempt to do some weather stripping to fill that gap. Otherwise, though, similarly, if you were listening earlier in the program to what we were saying about making it less desirable for bats to be there, might be a good solution. So you can try spraying vinegar. You could try spraying a pet deterrent or animal deterrent spray that you might use on a garden. You could try to attempt to change the temperature of the space by shading it or cooling it down using air movement, a fan. You know, and that fan might only need to be there for a couple of weeks running at the beginning of the summer in order to encourage those bats to select a different roosting area.
Yeah, I joined the program late, so I appreciate any suggestions. So maybe vinegar, and I can ask the landlords and so forth about what is dripping, and hopefully, yeah, I appreciate it very much.
Yeah, thanks.
And I very gently saved several beds. So thank you for the program.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Yeah, weather stripping, you know, it's hard for me to visualize exactly what's going mm-hmm. on there, but weather stripping might be an... sort of a permanent answer to the issue. But if it's not, the other suggestions are certainly good ones. Judy in Reedstown, thanks for calling.
Hello. I'd like to know if your expert could comment on the soft tick that is associated with bats. We had a bad experience at our place where we put in bat excluders finally because we had such an overpopulation in the peak of an old farmhouse. And as a result, the house below was invaded with these soft ticks. The bats could never get into the living spaces that we had, but the ticks could. And before we realized that this phenomenon even existed, I got bitten by a tick, and I have ehrlichiosis. I had quite a bad experience with ehrlichiosis. These ticks don't look like wood ticks, and they don't attach and stay on. They bite and go away, but they're a little arachnid. It has its little eight legs, and it's sluggish and sort of inoffensive looking.
But a problem, I guess I'm not familiar with those ticks, Paul, but you may be.
Right. Thanks for the call, Judy. Certainly there are parasites that will follow bats around from a roost site to roost site, and some actually specific to bats that will only predate on bats. But if you can imagine when you did your exclusion or tried to remove them from the attic space, all of a sudden their hosts were now gone. And so these parasites may have then migrated down into the living space, perhaps causing some displeasure from you and the other occupants. I can't say for certain what tick might have been affected or what parasite might have affected you, but it's difficult to say without actually seeing the parasite in hand. But certainly there are ticks and other parasites that are specific to bats.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And once more, here we've got Halloween Day is the day that we're going to try and set a new record for building bat houses, right?
That's the hope, yeah.
So again, where do we go? This is sort of is this a national thing, isn't it? Or is it just state?
This is a national effort. So you can go to the DNR website, search bats, and you can find a bat house building packet that you can download. It's got all of the instructions on it for building your own bat house. And, of course, we really want people to actually put the bat houses up so that they can get used. That's a really important part of this effort. But once the bat house is constructed, if you do it on Halloween Day on Saturday, go to batweek.org and report your bat house construction effort so that we can get it into the Guinness Book of World Records.
That would be very cool. And it's always fun to have you come by. Thank you so much, and I hope you'll come back and be with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
Love to have you back. Paul White, mammal ecologist at the Natural Heritage Conservation Bureau of our DNR. Jennifer Riddell, cave and mine specialist at the Natural Heritage Conservation Bureau of our Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. They do some really great work, and it's always interesting and fun to have them with us, and they will be back. You know, it's also fun to have Dan Small stop by. He comes by every so often, hadn't been around for a while, but he's here today, coming up next, to talk about the television special that he hosts every year. This one's called Wisconsin Deer Hunt 2015. That next on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.